Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast back to preview the new Premier League season, which starts in just 2 days. On Friday night, things get underway with Manchester United taking on our beloved Fulham over at Old Trafford. My name's Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me from across the pond, all the way from San Diego, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, happy new season, everybody. Here we go. This is where the proper stuff really begins. I know we've had like almost a full start because you get a few leagues kicking off and the weekend just gone. And that's all fine. But this is the real stuff. And I'm obviously excited, Jack. Fulham Man United will be a midday kickoff out here. So that'll be slightly strange. I'm going to feel detached. I've actually been messaging one of our listeners, TJ, who is a big part of Full America out here. He got in touch as soon as I moved to say, look, mate, if you want to stay in touch with Fulham fans, we're the place to be out here. So I've been making sure I speak to him, like, how am I following this season? What channels do I need? What's my go-to stream? Like, how am I going to get by here? Am I the only Fulham fan in the whole of San Diego? I might be, to be fair, apart from Dylan. I think if I get five people together, Jack, I can set up a San Diego supporters club.
So that's not convincing.
Maybe that'll be my aim. I think once you do that, you start to get some free stuff sent over. So that'd be quite cool. But obviously shaping up my FPL team for the new season as well. Anybody that wants anything on that, get over to Chasing Green Arrows, where we've got loads of content this week with our draft for the new season. Haaland, Salah, what do you need to know? But for this particular episode, it's obviously one of our favourites. We're basically going to make our big predictions on the new Premier League season.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's important to suggest that this isn't 5x5. So these sort of predictions are not locked in stone and adapted towards the end of the season to see what we got right. Those ones tend to come a couple of weeks into the season when you get a bit more of a viewpoint on what's going on. But it is very exciting in terms of what we're going to be looking at and what we're going to be examining. So we're going to start at the top. Today, we're going to talk through the top four, the European race, the title race, the relegation battles, top scorers, assists, surprise packages, new signings, players of the season, managers sacked, etc., etc. But we're going to start at the top. And what we're going to do is work through the top eight from last season and predict, have a little chat about each of them and predict where they're going to finish this season. Dean and I will have separate predictions, I assume. We'll try and find some sort of consensus on what we can at the very least agree on. But DJ, will start with the current champions, Manchester City, 4 Premier League titles in a row. Will that become 5?
Oh, honestly, I've got my doubts, Jack. They've been formidable, obviously. But I tell you what, I'm not wholly convinced about them doing it for a 5th time in a row as we sit here right now. Now, the transfer window's still open. We're yet to see them play to their full capacity, obviously, because in pre-season, even in the Community Shield, we haven't been getting the full version of Man City. And so they have been a difficult team to kind of gauge where they're at. I'm careful about saying they won't win the league because Haaland has just had a summer off. And I do wonder if the monster is about to break back through and go on an absolute rampage and score 50 goals this season. And if that happens, they win the league. But the big issue for me at the moment for Man City, and obviously they've lost Julian Alvarez, which is a bigger loss than I think some people are realizing right now, because Julian Alvarez was such a reliable figure wherever you put him into that team. They put him into that team a lot last season, whether De Bruyne was out, Haaland was out, he was your go-to guy. They haven't got him now. So how do they replace that? But also it's this Rodri conundrum, right? What do they do about when Rodri's not there? That's what I'm wondering. Will they sign somebody? I've got a hunch they still will. I still feel they might. But I've also got this feeling that Rodri misses more of this season than he has in the past, because it's all going to catch up eventually on Man City, right? And I think that they're very wary of this too, and it's probably one of the reasons they're trying to offload Calvin Phillips right now. They need to get bodies out so they can get bodies in to the squad. Not necessarily for financial reasons, just because of squad cover.
Playing reasons, right?
Yeah. But I've got my reservations, Jack. They're still on their day, the best team in this league. I shouldn't really be casting any doubts over them, given they've just won it 4 years in a row, and that makes them the best Premier League outfit we've ever seen. And they still have Pep Guardiola, despite some concerns at the back end of last season that perhaps it was all drawn to a close. He might end up even signing a new contract, mate, in the coming months. But I just think that the door is opening here for Arsenal to go for it. I think Arsenal are still improving. Arsenal are yet to get to the best version of themselves. And City might have peaked. And if they just drop off a tiny, tiny bit and Arsenal can keep this up, they can pip them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is where I'm at. I mean, we come to City, and I agree with you. I think Julian Alvarez is a bigger miss than many will notice. Not necessarily because I think that he is, and I saw some conversations like, why is everyone getting so excited about City's second choice striker? But Alvarez's versatility and the fact that you knew that wherever you dropped him in, he would do a job. Now, City obviously have an incredible squad, but just one of those players who makes things tick, who'd find a moment, who'd find a goal when things looked a little bit iffy for them. I think that's a bigger loss than expected. And whilst I think that Savinho coming in, and there's a lot of confusion, I think, about Savinho in terms of, is he Savio or is he Savinho? Because he was known as both at Girona last year. I do think
it's thrown me, mate. At first, it definitely threw me. I was like, is it two people? What have I missed?
Yeah, I thought we should probably bring that one up because, you know, I think some people might be a tad sort of all over the place with it, but it is the same guy that's a Girona. He just has two names, Little Savio or Savio. It doesn't matter which, right. But
both versions, extremely good.
Extremely good. But that feels like cover for Riyad Mahrez leaving. Now they've spoken about James McAtee stepping up. There's chat a little bit about Nico O'Reilly stepping up into maybe being that Rodri rotator. Those are wonderful things. And I think the other thing about this, and I've been watching quite a lot of Stephen McInerney's bits across the summer, who I think is a wonderful speaker on all things City, and his esteemed company channel is well worth a check out if you're a City fan. But when you're kind of looking at that and it kind of expanding on it, he seems to be kind of accepting of the idea that, okay, it might take a little bit for these academy products to break into the side. Now, Oscar Bob is another one. He's had a phenomenal preseason and looks like he's going to be a key factor for them this year. But there's a lot of kind of feeling a lot around Steven's channel, I think, in particular, but also around City fans and City pieces that I've been reading, that they're kind of excited to see what these players can bring. I'm wondering if this could be the season where City maybe had 5-6 academy talents playing regularly in the first team. And if that's the case, there might be a little bit of a drop-off, but I don't know if that's going to upset City fans in the same way it would if they'd bought in loads of players and then there was a drop-off, because I feel like there's a sense of building something at the club that's maybe a little bit more long-term, finding a pathway for these players to get back into the first team and making something slightly more sustainable. All of those things I think matter. But I think Arsenal have been knocking on the door for long enough now that with one more signing, if Arsenal get Mikel Merino over the line, I think Arsenal win the league. So that's where I'm at with it. I think if he gets over the line, that is the final piece of the puzzle that takes Arsenal to Premier League champions, which is a bit of a strange place to be because we're recording this and the season begins before the transfer window ends. So there's always that kind of sense of, well, things can obviously change. And as you say, maybe they sign a Rodri rotator who are all like, how have you got away with that? How have you signed a Joshua Kimmich to bring in alongside Rodri and also to cover for him in moments that he can't play? And if they can do that, then things can change. But where I am right now, I think I'm giving Arsenal the edge. I think at this point, I think Arsenal are going to win the league.
Is it because Merino is that good, or is it because of what he does to the structure and the depth of the midfield?
I think it's to do with what you want from Declan Rice. And look, I think Declan Rice is one of those kind of strange players in that as a defensive player, he's a wonderful number six. And I think that that's his best role. But he's not that comfortable picking up the ball on the half turn, being able to build from those phases. And we've seen Arsenal struggle at that at times. I think Merino is a brilliant foil for him because he does a bit of both. So when it comes to defensive phases, he will zip about and make recoveries and allow Declan Rice to be that kind of more traditional Rodri-esque, I suppose, six, in that he'll be able to just cover and shield. But actually, when Arsenal do have the ball, they almost switch roles. And it allows Marino to do things that he is comfortable in terms of picking up the ball and passing it and punching it through the lines to actually get Arsenal into those thirds that they want to be in and get those players into position that they want to be attacking and on the ball around the opposition box. I think you're looking for someone with this who isn't a traditional six. And Rice is a bit of a funny player because he's sort of halfway between the two. But on the ball, I think he struggles sometimes with what Arsenal are trying to do, punching out. And I think if they can tidy that up, they'll be less susceptible to the press to begin with. But also, you know, with the that defense behind them and then suddenly being able to turn almost any defense into attack, I think it's kind of a game-changing signing in that it pushes Arsenal to the next level.
Yeah, and obviously Calafiori being in there is another...
And Yurian Timber coming back in, you know,
Timber back in the fold. Zinchenko's been playing in preseason and has actually been looking really good.
Yep.
And shouldn't probably be overlooked if he's remaining part of the setup. Arsenal is still evolving, right? And we haven't seen this team peak yet because they're still growing. And there's still also potential for a forward to come in as well at Arsenal. Now, I don't know exactly what's happened on that front because this has been talked about all summer and there have been a lot of names that Arsenal have looked at, from Leroy Sané to Kingsley Coman to Nico Williams, Gyökeres, Rodrigo. They've all been linked with Arsenal, as well as the likes of Osimhen was linked a little bit. I don't think Arsenal are going to go and sign an out-and-out striker. I think it will be, if they do get a forward figure in, it'll be someone that's kind of more capable of playing on the wide positions on the attack.
Yeah.
But the fact that Arsenal have got a defensive signing in, are going to get a midfielder signing in, whether it's, I still do believe it is Marino, and that they're just haggling over the price and the structure right now rather than any serious problems. But if it's not him, they'll sign somebody else. And possibly a forward. At a time when Man City haven't made signings, at a time when Liverpool haven't made signings, that's quite interesting. And if you think about, there was that moment when Liverpool accelerated their transfer plans a few years back, when they went and signed Alisson and stuff, you know, and they threw all this money at the project. And the reason that Liverpool did that at that time was because they anticipated a moment to play catch up and actually get way ahead of where they, what would usually have taken them two, maybe three transfer
it's
windows.
The opportunity almost.
Yes. And I feel like this is Arsenal's opportunity. Because Liverpool are standing still, because of the Zubimendi deal falling through, I think that's a massive moment we'll talk about in a second with Liverpool. But also with City not yet doing anything, look, that can change. Liverpool could make more signings. City could certainly make signings. As we sit here right now, Arsenal, the only team actually bettering themselves with new personnel. This is a massive, massive moment for Arsenal. And in pre-season, we're seeing really, really good things, including the fact that they seem to have new focus on set pieces. Declan Rice's corners seem to be unbelievable. Are the setbacks too of the last 2 years and the learnings that come from that? You have to now take that next step. This could be it, right? This could be it, especially because I don't think that Liverpool are quite going to be where Arsenal and Man City are. I think Liverpool will fall just short.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it's nice. Come on, just before we leave Arsenal, I've got a theory that actually this is the year that Arsenal diversify their attack. And Calafiori coming in, I think, is a major, major boost to Gabriel Martinelli on that left flank, because suddenly he's going to have a player who is capable of getting round the outside of him, who is capable of making those forays forward that has to drag defenders away. We haven't really seen that. And for the last year or so, I think Martinelli obviously had injury problems, but apart from that, even when he did play, felt crowded out at times. And I think he's at his best when he's able to duck inside and really get at players. that involves having decoy runners. And a lot of Arsenal's build-up went down that right-hand side last year. And a lot of their goals, you know, came from set pieces around that Christmas period. And it felt like they were kind of hanging on a little bit by that set-piece ability. I think them being able to diversify that with Calafiori coming in and making those forays down that left-hand side should open this up for Arsenal in that there will be more spaces for people to attack. I think Martinelli gets a boost. I think his scoring numbers go through the roof this season. And suddenly I think that they're in play on both sides. And that is an attacking line that's therefore almost impossible to deal with. So when all of that comes to fruition, if it comes to fruition, of course, I think that might be the thing that sees them over the line. So I'm going to go Arsenal 1, City 2. Takes us on to Liverpool, who finished third last season. Arne Slot's obviously replaced Jurgen Klopp as the manager. Liverpool were in the title race until March. And I think we were all pretty comfortable with that before they fell away towards the end of things. Obviously ended up finishing 9 points behind City and 7 behind Arsenal, but equally they only won 2 of their last 5 games. So it kind of comes to that point where it all kind of came apart at the seams. It felt like the squad was there a little bit earlier than expected. Arne Slot's now come in. They haven't made any signings as yet. Zubimendi fell through early this week, which would have been, I think, the kind of signing that could have propelled them into this conversation. But I'm still quite comfortable saying that I think Liverpool finished third again.
Yeah. I think that there is probably more optimism and potential expectation than there was when Slot initially came in, because I think fans have been buoyed by what they've seen during pre-season. I was speaking to one of our Patreon listeners, Michael, who lives out here in San Diego. He just had a baby, actually. Congratulations, Michael, and your family. But he was talking to me over text the other day and messaging me about Liverpool when they were pursuing Zubimendi. But one of the things he said, he was like, Arne Slot is looking great. The players seem to love him. There's no nonsense involved here. And it actually feels like almost a fresh air from Klopp, who I still love, but can be a little bit of a drama queen. And I was like, that's quite an interesting take on it. Like the different style of management, the different way of speaking to these players and getting the best out of them. Obviously, Klopp is full of love and comfort and then can turn on them when he has to make sure that they know he's not happy. But it'd be interesting to see what Slot's approach is here. He's gotten playing some beautiful football. There's no doubt about that already. We've seen it. It's very slick. It's very fluid. And I think that's going to continue. But he's got a real balancing act to do here. Firstly, in terms of finding the fix for that defensive midfield problem, because it was identified under Klopp and it was identified by Slot when he came into the job. They both felt this team needed a number 6. Endo has even said, I think it would be good if we signed a number 6. Now, it might be that in this situation with the Zubimendi stuff collapsing, that Endo comes back into the equation. He didn't seem to be in the picture under Slot. And I think that Slot needs to become a bit more open-minded about Endo in that position, because there's Curtis Jones and there's Grafenberch. I don't think they do what Endo does. And we saw Endo put in some great performances last season for Liverpool that show his capabilities. But obviously, the stage of his career he's at.
Tough preseason. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's tough. And so I do think that it might continue to be a flaw, or certainly a weakness that Slot has to help this team evolve from. And then there's the balance going forward. What is the top? What's the first choice top 3? What's the best way of keeping these players happy for minutes? How do you involve Harvey Elliott, who is clearly ready for regular first team football? How are you getting the best out of Dominic Szoboszlai, who also feels like this is it? Like he's had his like comforting spell in the Premier League. He's adjusted to it. Let him break free now. Let him get into that box more. I want to see what you get from Szoboszlai, but it's that front rotation. They've got so many players to keep happy. We're reading already today about Luis Diaz again. You know, first it was Barcelona being linked with him. Now it's Man City. I don't believe there's anything happening on that front. But there's always something around Luis Diaz that doesn't feel completely comforting. Darwin Nunez doesn't fill anybody, I don't think, with optimism right now, or how many games he even plays. Jota's looking good. Gakpo didn't look great the other day, but obviously did do well in the Euros.
Playing off the left.
Now, playing off the left, this is the thing. It's that balance. So Liverpool will be good. And I think Slot, I actually fancy him to win a trophy in this season, actually. I do fancy that Slot can do that. Can he win the Premier League?
First hot take. That's good. Good.
Yeah, I think I do. I think Liverpool will be a really, really good bet for the Carabao Cup or the FA Cup. I really do. Because they've still got that mentality within this team too that exists from the past era. But winning the Premier League, I think, will prove beyond him. And I don't even think that by the time we get to March, I don't even think they'll be in the conversation. That's my hunch at this stage.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, I agree. They've been playing some glorious football, but I think there are still the occasional bits and bobs that need to be worked out. And that transition from Klopp style to Slots, which are different. They do have similarities at times, especially off the ball, but on ball, I think it's slightly different. And they're going to have to get used to playing some of those, you know, just some of those patterns, etc. It's going to take a little while, especially given that a lot of these key players have been away for the summer, right? He hasn't had that full preseason that you might have expected. So I'm with you. I am. I think that Liverpool will be short of the top two. I think there's still a couple of signings short, but I think generally this will be seen as a relatively successful first campaign. And I think finishing third and winning a cup and, you know, maybe reaching the quarter semis of the Champions League probably constitutes a successful first season for France.
Yeah. And it's winning the trust over of the fans as well and stuff like that. And just making sure that you're felt to be embracing the cultures of Liverpool and that you're keeping that feel-good factor and that community aspect that Klopp had built there. That's going to be vital. You know, this fan base don't have an affinity for Slot. They don't have a connection to Slot from previous years. And that's what, obviously, he's trying to build right now. And I think he's done a decent job of it, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I do think it's absolutely vital that Liverpool get off to a strong start to this season. Not because I think Slot will be like the first manager sacked or anything like that, but I think it'll be impossible to stay on the tails of Arsenal and Manchester City if you have a slow start. So bursting out the traps for me is essential. Probably helps. They've got Ipswich first game of the season. I think that's a great chance for Liverpool to make a statement. It's one of the reasons that I'm finding it very hard to look beyond having Mo Salah actually in my fantasy team from week one, because I think that's a brilliant fixture. But then even beyond that, you're looking like they've got Brentford at home week two, and then you're going into a game in week three at Old Trafford against Man United with your first chance to make a statement, Slot v Ten Hag. It will be really hyped up, that rivalry. And if Liverpool can go to Man United third week of the season and beat them, that's where you make your statement early on.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, let's come on to Villa, who obviously came fourth last season, Champions League football for Unai Emery's mighty Villains. They were phenomenal across the course of the last campaign. Look, Villa have had a good summer, I think, by pretty much all accounts. I think their business has been pretty sharp. They've lowered the average age of the squad. Obviously, they had to get rid of Douglas Luiz for PSR purposes. He went off to Juventus. But in terms of who they've brought in to replace him, I think that they've done a good job shifting around the age profiles of this squad and actually filling it out with real young talent that has an opportunity to shine this season. But Champions League football, we know there's going to be 8 games now in the group stages. Where are Villa? And what do we expect from them this season?
Well, they've still got Ollie Watkins. So I'm going to look at that as the first point that is extremely important for Aston Villa. Because there had been very small doubts, I would say, about, you know, where Ollie Watkins would begin this season, because his trajectory has been strong and quick. And I think there were definitely clubs considering whether he might become available. I think Aston Villa were like, no chance. There's no way that you're getting this guy out of this football club. And then they've obviously gone on and had a very, very strong early transfer window where they've put the pieces in place to make sure that they're stronger for the new season. You know, Mattson and Onana would be probably the headline additions that we've seen come in. But this is all about Emery continuing the evolution. You know, like, it was so fast to turn things around from where they were under Steven Gerrard and, you know, the mess that they found themselves in. I don't think they can build on fourth. I'm not sure they can even match. I don't believe they can match fourth. I think that because they've now got the added dimension of Champions League football, I just think that it's going to be personally beyond them. I don't think they'll fall off quite as much as Newcastle did last season.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think that that was heavy and drastic. And I don't believe that that will happen because of the way that they've strengthened and because it's Emery at the helm. So I don't think we'll see a Newcastle type fall off here. But with Diaby leaving, I'm slightly concerned for them about following up Watkins' goal output. And I still think that Douglas Luiz is a massive loss in midfield.
Yeah.
I know that they've replaced him and they've had a good transfer window. But yeah, I just feel like Douglas Luiz was such a big part. I didn't believe that they would let him go, but they have. And I'm just not writing them off of being in the conversation for the top four. I just think that they'll struggle to reach that again.
Yeah, I mean, also, there is a possibility that fifth is enough for the Champions League, right?
I mean, yeah, that's true.
The new rules that things work and how that things... I think you're right. But also, I wonder what constitutes a successful season for Aston Villa. Because for my money, Villa finishing sixth and getting out of that league format from the new Champions League, Villa finishing in a European spot again, maybe in the Europa League spot, let's call it, and getting to, I don't know, the last 16 of the Champions League, that for me is probably a successful campaign in terms of following up. When you look at what happened to Newcastle, and look, I think sometimes it's easy to go, oh, Newcastle really fell off, and they did to a point, but they also still finished seventh. And if the FA Cup had gone a different way, they would have got back into Europe. And I think that would have been seen as a kind of, okay, a decent follow-up. And that obviously didn't help that Newcastle didn't get out of their Champions League group, but they put in some good performances and there were some moments in that. I think finishing sixth for Villa would be a good season as long as they get through that first stage of the Champions League and they're able to play knockout European football again. I think that would probably be seen as consolidation on, and you know, on being ahead of schedule probably.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, a lot of this will also come down to the debate of the teams that are around them and how those sides, Chelsea, Man United, how they've strengthened, what Newcastle do in terms of a fight back, whether a club like, I don't know, West Ham can push themselves into this conversation. There's all other outside factors as well to come into the conversation. But, you know, Villa have also upgraded in terms of having a better kit manufacturer this season. They finally got a decent kit.
Yeah, yeah. They're really
definitely. So they'll be looking
nice
better too, which might give them body confidence to carry along with it.
Okay, let's say that Villa drop out of the top four. Who have you got finishing fourth?
Man United.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because that's quite far off where I have them. So
they're fixing the flaws. They're massively fixing the flaws that were there. And to be signing Leny Yoro and Matthias De Ligt fixes a huge, huge problem that they had at centre back when you're having to end the season playing like Casemiro and Johnny Evans. Like, that is like last straw emergency stuff. And they can't find themselves getting into that situation again. I mean, I still think they've got two, you know, I don't think Lindelof will probably be at United by the time the deadline comes. But I think that to have Maguire and Evans there as experience that can come in is good, but you don't want to be leaning on them week in, week out. And I think to have Lucho as kind of the man, if you can get through a season and have Martinez like as a regular at the centre of that defence, that's huge. That's hugely significant. That was a massive miss from last season. And to have, it's a shame obviously that Yoro's already out, but to now have brought De Ligt in just shows the intent to make sure that that flaw is gone. Mazraoui coming in, they've identified him in terms of his style of play. I think it's great in terms of having him already on board, ready to attack the season. And then if they get that DM in, which they're trying to do right now, they're still focused on Ugarte. I think it's important really that it is Ugarte at this point, to be honest, because they've spent so much time on it. I think that would be big. If they didn't end up signing a DM, then I wouldn't have them coming into fourth place. I think that if you were looking at it and you had like Casemiro alongside Kobbie Mainoo again, I wouldn't be confident of that happening. But you can sign somebody that can actually protect and can get around better and can sense danger better. Well, not sense danger better, because Casemiro, I think, can sense danger. He just can't get there.
Can't get to it.
I think that that's huge. And I do believe it will happen. And if it's not, then Sanderberge, I don't think that's the answer. I don't think Sanderberge would be great, but I do think it would be at least something. And then up front, having Joshua Zirkzee in there now, again, that is going to be a huge upgrade on when Rasmus Højlund is not available. That's huge. And so
it's it's also completely different. Now,
it's better in a good way, mate, because it then opens up gaps for Rashford to actually get back to doing what he does best.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. But like, I think, you know, that using those interchangeable parts is a kind of worry in some ways. My concern with United is that I think they will be really good against, you know, what we saw in the Community Shield. I thought they were the better side over the course of it. Yes, it was a weakened City, but still, I thought the United were the better team, even if they didn't go on to lift the trophy. Obviously, they showed in the FA Cup final last season that they can play in these games. I'm still not convinced that they're going to be able to break down teams who sit in front of them. I think this United will be good in games where they're allowed that opportunity to open up. And I think that when they play the big teams, they'll actually impress. But I'm still not convinced that Manuel Ugarte solves their problems in possession when they're trying to break a team down, when they have those moments. And that's why I really struggle with putting United in the top four spot right now.
Here's the thing. I actually think they'll have a bad start to the season. I actually think that the first three games of the season are extremely difficult for Man United, and that, for example, I genuinely think that Fulham can go to Old Trafford on Friday with the team that we saw Man United put out at the weekend against Man City. Given Fulham's strengths with the team that they've been using for the past 2-3 pre-season matches, I think Fulham can go to Old Trafford and get at least a draw. Okay, if that happens, then game week two, Man United are going to Brighton. I think Brighton would fancy their chances of getting something. And then United would be going to that Liverpool game that I mentioned and could lose it. And I can see like that genuinely being the start of their season. So that goes against what I said. But I think that this team, they have to stick to trusting Ten Hag here at this moment and trust that getting these players playing together and give De Ligt time to settle, give the DM time to settle. They might even get another forward, mate. If Jadon Sancho ends up leaving and going to PSG or something, they would plausibly look to get another forward figure into that front line. So they've got to be a bit patient and get through that first three-game spell, hopefully for them, without it ending up like I've just spelled out in the most drastic way possible. And getting to the Southampton and Crystal Palace games that come next and starting to settle and establish their patterns of play and actually get the results that they feel they'll deserve. But I think United, long term, over 38 games, will be fine. I think that it's going to be a slow start. Judged, obviously, I've watched them closer than probably any other team during pre-season, and the patterns are good. Ruud van Nistelrooy behind the scenes is having a massive impact on the mindset of this team.
Good, because he's probably going to be in charge by April.
Yeah, no, they're going to stick with this. But honestly, I think that there is reason for optimism at United. It's just, yeah, the goals just have to come. Like when Rashford missed those two chances, the Community Shield, I was like, this is the fine line. This is what separates you, right? And the thing is, mate, I don't know that I trust anybody else more than them to come forth. And I think that that might even become a theme of the season. There's not an obvious team for me that is going to be better than Man United or more consistent than Man United.
Well, I think the thing is, I have them at six. That's where I pegged them in. And yeah. That's an improvement. That's a 2-point improvement.
No, that's completely understandable. I don't blame you for doing that.
That's an improvement on last season. That's where they moved up to. I have Tottenham in fourth. I think Tottenham are weirdly the team that I've watched the most in pre-season for no apparent reason, apart from they just seem to be on at more reasonable times than everyone else. Yeah. And I've really, really enjoyed what I've seen from Spurs. I think their signings have been pretty excellent across the board. Yes, they might have overpaid a little bit for Solanke, but I think that having him in this side and what, you know, hearing Ange speak about him and what he represents and what his career's been and those setbacks and fighting back for them all seems to add up to what Ange wants. I think he has options. I still think they're short one creative player who can get his foot on the ball and make things happen in the final third, but they're linked with Eberechi Eze. So I think Spurs will have a real good go at this season. And I think that considering, you know, they're going to be playing Europa League football and therefore can maybe rotate a little bit more than the teams in the Champions League. Obviously, that applies to Manchester United as well, but not sure how much the rotations change at United. I think they're going to be trying to find consistency. I'm not sure that's the same at Spurs. I think that Tottenham will be able to have a real good go at it. I have them at fourth.
Yeah. I don't trust them. I don't trust them to do it. I've got doubts about their depth at fullback. And I think it's such an important position for the structure of this team that losing Porro or Adoji, unless, look, we might well see that they sign somebody that's versatile enough to cover those positions convincingly. That changes my mind on that. But I think there's reason to believe that that is a potential problem area going into the new season. I think they're going to be a good team. I'm not convinced they're going to become a Champions League team. That's where I'm probably at right now. The top variations that they've got, I think, are good. I'm not definitely convinced that they've got the goal power. It depends how Solanke adjusts to being this guy that is not the go-to. Well, I guess he is still the go-to guy for goals, but at Bournemouth, he was the superstar, right? And he's just another player at Tottenham. Like, Son, for me, will outscore Solanke this season. That's my personal feeling. On Patreon, we had a few people writing in on Monday talking about Solanke getting 20-plus goals this season. And I think that's a massive ask. Is he going to be on penalties this season? I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not. So if he's not on penalties, then I think expecting 20-plus goals from Solanke is too much. And I'd probably set the bar for him at 15.
Yeah, but
if he hits 15, that might be great.
I think they get Champions League football.
Possibly. Possibly, yeah. And I think he is a good profile of signing. Obviously, a lot's been talked about the way that he is going to kind of set the press, the way he chases things down, his style of play, his body movements, but also his body strength. And he is, like, he's got great pedigree in the game. Like, he's come all through Solanke's youth. We've heard of him. We knew of him. We didn't really see him get the right platform to produce what everybody else had seen in him in his younger days. So this is his chance. It doesn't mean he'll definitely take it. It doesn't mean it will definitely work out. And so it is a slight risk from Tottenham. I think the structuring of the deal probably protects them a little bit because they haven't paid £60 million up front. But they've gone for it. They've gone for the figure that replaces Harry Kane in this team as an actual focal point. They've realised that they can't trust Richarlison to back up Son, and that's all good stuff. If I was to put Tottenham squad alongside Man United, player by player, I actually think Man United is still better.
Okay. All right, that's fair enough. It is an interesting one. I mean, before we move on and shift to the other end of the table, I did want to just briefly talk about Chelsea and Newcastle, who are obviously the other teams that finished. Chelsea, obviously, in the European places. Newcastle would have done if they hadn't won, or if United hadn't won the FA Cup. Where do you see them? Are they in the conversation? And is there a level here to which you see them, which one finishes above the other?
I don't trust either of them, so I've got absolutely no idea. I can honestly see both of them imploding. So I don't know which one it will happen to. If Newcastle don't start well, if they're not like in top four, top five contention by the time we're getting towards Christmas, then I can see a situation where the ownership panic and Eddie Howe suddenly goes from being in talked about as Gareth Southgate's successor to being out of a job. Wouldn't surprise me at all, because that's the level Newcastle have to expect of themselves now. They've had the big build-up. They've qualified for the Champions League. They've fallen out of it. They've got to get back in it. They have to. They're so ambitious. They're so determined to make sure that players like Isak, Gimenez, Gordon, Sven Botman, like, they're not supposed to be the standout stars. That's supposed to become the norm, that they have players of that level, right? And so they need to ensure that they are showing potential signings for the future, that that is the norm. And that if they bring in Mark Gahey, that he is signing a team that is heading towards the Champions League and not the peripheries or of qualifying for the Europa League, if you like. I think they've played some good stuff. And I think that having Gordon and Barnes in a good shape in and around Isak is going to have them in yeah, good condition, good shape to go forward, but still got trust issues, like I do with probably all of these teams, to be fair, over the course of 38 games. Chelsea, we should not even be talking. If they pull off some of the business that they're potentially going to make between now and the end of the window, like, Chelsea shouldn't just be talked about as qualifying for the top four. They should be in that top four. And I think actually, like, the expectations that there are generally in the game for them are too low. I think you should expect more from Chelsea this season. I think you should be expecting them to be challenging Liverpool for third, or possibly even pushing for second spot, given the financial outlay, given the fact that they've gone and got Pedro Neto seemingly out of nowhere, seeming that they're still contemplating going and signing someone like Victor Osimhen as the main man. They're still thinking of bringing in João Felix, as we talk right now. If they get João Felix in and Victor Osimhen, forget about top four. Chelsea should be competing for the Premier League title next season. I'm absolutely no doubt that that's the expectation that you should have of them. But of course, they've got this huge weakness at the back right
obviously,
now.
Obviously, you don't win in the Premier League title with that defence. Like, defences win titles, as Jose Mourinho once famously said. And this,
yeah, and this current version definitely wouldn't do that. But that's a fix, which, is it an oversight? Have they been so focused on making sure that they've got players for 5 years' time that they've forgotten that they need a centre-back for this season? Maybe. Maybe. I said to you the other day on Patreon, I think that Reece James not being available at the moment might help them, because I think him getting used to his new role was a problem, not just as an individual, but I think as a team, they weren't settling. They weren't adjusting to the way that he inverted and how those two midfielders were getting overrun and the holes that were left, because Chelsea haven't had attacking players on the wings that are good defensively. They haven't had that. They don't like working back. And in the early preseason games in America, you were seeing that. They were conceding so many goals. One, because of the fact they were just switching off. But secondly, because they didn't have the work rate going backwards. Maybe that's something that they are trying to attend to right now, because Maresca's identified that too. The good thing about Maresca is that he's trying a lot of things right now. The bad thing about him is I think he'll be proved to be very stubborn, and that if things aren't going well in the early weeks of this season, he might just turn a blind eye to it all and keep going down a dead end, and he could end up as one of the managers under pressure. So I find it very difficult actually to draw a conclusion as to what we should expect from Chelsea, but I do think we should be expecting more from them than we should be from Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it's not necessarily what Chelsea fans perhaps have been watching in preseason, but part of me thinks they're going to be incredibly fun to watch, that there might be a lot of 4-3s going on here. Now, that's not necessarily what you want to hear as a Chelsea fan, I'm sure, but part of me thinks that this could actually be just chaos. And the fact that they can't defend, but they have this abundance of riches in attack. Yeah. You know, you're talking about, if you pick three players behind a striker, right, and you can go, oh yeah, we'll have, you know, Pedro Neto or Raheem Sterling on one side. We'll have, you know, Nkunku or Cole Palmer in the middle, or Palmer on the right. And then maybe Madueka comes in for a few games. Mikhailo Mudryk's in there somewhere.
How do you keep all of them happy though?
I don't know. And that's a problem.
You didn't mention Nicholas Jackson. Where's he playing this season?
Well, I was suggesting he'd play up front in front of these. But the point being, but maybe not, because if Victor Osimhen comes in,
that's
got another
the thing,
player
and I think
right
he's
there.
Concerned about that. You know, they've gone after Omeridian. I know it didn't happen, but like trying to sign him showed something.
Yeah, was João Felix even right? Like these all feature. But I mean, that is an astonishing array of talent to play up top, and someone's got to get a tune out of these. And behind them, look, I know that there's been a lot of, you know, players used in pre-season, and I know that the treatment of Conor Gallagher I don't think has been particularly good from Chelsea. But you look at Enzo and Moises Caicedo and you think, well, on paper, that should be sensational. And not just because they were both £100 million players, but because Enzo has been sensational when he's played for Argentina. And the fact is that without that injury that he was carrying last year, he should be able to step up his game this season. Moises Caicedo, I thought, grew into his Chelsea career. And obviously, it was a little bit of a bumpy start. But by the end of last season, I think we were starting to see exactly why Chelsea had paid so much for Moises Caicedo. Maybe they overpaid, fine. But in terms of what he does and what he achieves, I think he's a wonderful footballer. That front, well, the five there in the middle between the, you know, the two defensive midfielders, the two pivot players, and the three behind the striker,
are a match quality-wise for almost anyone on Earth. It's just what's happening everywhere else that I have major concerns with. So I also don't know. But I think that if they can find themselves a rhythm, then there is an incredible amount of talent here that they need to work with. And if Maresca can get that going, then perhaps this is the moment that Chelsea start to push themselves back to where they expect to be.
Yeah, do you know what I actually find really interesting about Chelsea as well? We'll just probably end on this one, but it's the type of managers that Maresca is coming up in the first few weeks. Like, obviously, like game week one, his head-to-head with Guardiola is going to be a big one, but I don't expect Chelsea to win that game. But then you get onto game week two, and I'm like, Gary O'Neill at home against Maresca. I fancy, honestly, Gary O'Neill to come up with a game plan that can
expose Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next week, he's up against Glasner. Now, Glasner, you've seen what he's done in his short time at Crystal Palace last season. I expect Crystal Palace to be elevated from that this season. He's had the time that Maresca hasn't had to get a grip on what is good about this team. I think Crystal Palace will give Chelsea a really good game there because of that. Then you've got Iraola next. He's got to go at Bournemouth. Again, on paper, you would be looking at these games thinking, well, Chelsea should go and win that. And they're like really tricky fixtures. And then the next week, he's going against Lopetegui, another new manager, yes, but a manager that has actually spent money on first team players that are strengthening his first 11. And I think all these like different things, and then actually next week he's got Brighton, who obviously got another new manager that's trying to implement stuff, but it's showing really good signs. So these early learnings, on one hand, they might help Maresca that they're not all like top level, you know, they're not all Guardiolas and Klopps or whatever else, but they're all learning their trade, yes, but they've also mostly got a grip already on what they're doing, whereas Maresca is trying to in-game fix all these problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's two sides to the sword, right, in terms of a double edge, in terms of having a relatively soft early schedule, City aside, in the if you win them all, great, and off you go, and the season starts to look quite nice. If you start to lose to these teams, and then suddenly you hit a run of form against the big boys, or you hit, you know, and it might not be enough, then suddenly you could be in a pretty precarious position by November. And that's, you know, not a great place to be. But I think that's probably time for us to move onwards from the top eight. After the break, we're going to be talking about the bottom three, and we're doing some quick fire bits on the rest of our Premier League predictions. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time to move onwards to the rest of the Premier League. And actually, something you were speaking about there, Dean, sort of in a slightly stranger manner, was this kind of middle order, which feels like it's going to be tighter, I think, this year than in a lot of years. And it's made it quite hard to predict who's going down, because in some ways, I don't think that the three teams who came up are going to be as easily pushed over or skittled as the three that came up last season. And yet, I'm kind of struggling to find teams that I think are going to drop in, because everybody has made a point here of strengthening this summer. So let's go with the bottom threes and see what you got. Who have you got going down this season?
The three promoted teams. Mate, I just can't see past it. I honestly can't see past it. I think that, I don't know, I hope it's not a worrying trend where it becomes impossible to stay in the Premier League. But I'm looking at the teams left from last season that survived. And say Everton. Like, Everton are a team that you should probably look at and be like, right, are they finally going down? They're not. I honestly don't think they are.
Well, look at where they would have finished without the points deductions, and suddenly it looks a little bit different, right?
And the team is actually better now. Like, I was watching their pre-season game that weekend. And the type of football they were playing was really nice. Like, they've got some really, really nice patterns of play to come. And I think the top end looks quite slick. And I think they've replaced Onana pretty well. I actually think Everton might have a decent season. So they were one of the teams I was expecting to throw into the mix. And then I got Brentford, right? I think, what could Brentford slide? And actually, I think there's a possibility they do. But still, I would expect...
I don't.
But I am clutching at straws here to find teams that could slide. But I still wouldn't expect them to slide any further than any of the teams that have just come up. Even, you know, Ipswich, I'm looking at all of their business. And I'm thinking, Ipswich, honestly, I struggle to even give them a hope. And I did this exact same thing with Luton last season. And they will definitely surprise me to some extent in terms of some of the results they pull off. Luton scored way more goals last season than I thought would be possible.
Yeah.
And that could end up being the case. Leicester City are trying to make a statement in terms of the type of signings I think that they bring in. And I think that if anyone does end up staying up out of these teams, it might be them.
I think Leicester, they're going to get hit with a points deduction. So it's like, I can't.
Well, then it's absolutely impossible if that happens. If Leicester get a points deduction, then they got no chance. Who have I forgotten?
Southampton.
I mean, traditionally, obviously, you would want to give Southampton a chance because they've been an established Premier League team so recently for so long. But because of the difficulties of last season, a disastrous run they obviously went on at one stage in the Championship campaign that looked like at one point it'd be almost impossible to get back in the mix. But then they turn it around and go on another incredible run that puts them into contention, and then they have this huge climax that gets them back into the Premier League, and they'll be looking to carry on that trajectory. But look across the squad and look across the... I just don't think that Saints will quite have what it takes to catch the worst of the rest, which to me isn't bad enough. Who do you see that potentially even slide? Because honestly, like Forest and Wolves, I think are looking really good for next season. By really good, I don't mean that like I'm going to expect them to make Europe, but I think they're both going to be much stronger than they were last season.
Yeah, it's really hard to find teams that are going to switch into it. And look, I think Ipswich are going to surprise a few people, but I'm struggling to find someone that drops down into this at this point. Southampton, I think, are a real issue, and I think they're going to struggle. Now, obviously, they've made some smartish signings. I really like Ronnie Edwards. They brought in Shigawara, but I still don't think that this is going to be enough to fix things in terms of their defensive array. I think Southampton could end up, and look, this might come back to bite me as a kind of prediction, but I think they're going to end up with maybe the most goals conceded ever from a Premier League team. That's why I'm looking at this team and go, I don't know how they're stopping goals going in. I don't think that there's the quality there to be able to deal with it. And that's not a particularly good place to be. For what it's worth, and here, you know, to bulk a prediction and move forward on one, I think Russell Martin's the first manager sacked because I think they start dreadfully. And then the problem with that is, as we've seen as Fulham fans, when Fulham sacked Slavisa Jovanovic and replaced him with Claudio Ranieri and was like, we need to shut up shop, we're conceding way too many goals, et cetera, et cetera. And the players weren't used to it, couldn't adapt and got relegated. I think that's going to happen again. I can see Southampton trying to shift because they're like, oh my God, this is not working. We are open as, and teams are running rampant against us, and not being able to find someone that's able to turn this squad around. So I can't see it from a Southampton perspective. I'd like to think that Ipswich might surprise a few people, but I'm struggling to see. Look, someone might drop in, you know, and as we're saying, that middle order might be a bit tighter, but there are always a side who come out of it. And you never know, you know, Fulham still have loads of gaps right now. And whilst I'm pretty optimistic about this Fulham season, if they don't sign a centre defensive midfielder and a centre back, I think that there is a chance that Fulham drop into this conversation. But equally, with that, and looking at these teams, if Leicester get that points deduction, I don't think Fulham finish below Ipswich or Southampton. And that's where I'm struggling to kind of find the kind of difference.
Yeah, look, I'm not even being biased because actually I'm actually one of the harshest critics on Fulham when I see things that I don't like. But I don't think Fulham will slide off to that extent. And in fact, once we have the centre-back position sorted, I even think that in the worst case of not replacing Palhinha, they'd probably get through to January and then strengthen if was need be. I've watched some of the pre-season performances from Fulham and I'm like, they're so slick. They're so in tune with what Marco Silva wants. They've brought in Emile Smith Rowe, who's fitted like a glove so far. He's got great combinations with the likes of Iwobi already. You've got a team that is built in terms of an understanding of the manager's philosophy. And even the players that are left over at the moment, I think are fine. I think it's fine for Fulham. And actually, Fulham got a chance to make a strong start to the season because of the fixture list and the way that it's panned out across the first 6 weeks. I think that they've got a good opportunity. As I say, maybe it is blind optimism, but I think Fulham go to Old Trafford and have a very good chance of getting something from that game. So there's just a big gap, I think, between the promoted teams and the teams that are left over from last year. And I'm sorry to anybody who is just been promoted, because if this was Fulham, I'll be angry to hear it. You don't want to hear that your team's going to have no chance. But the gulf is getting bigger. And the teams that are left over, the transfer business that they're making is one thing, but also the tactical adaptations that managers, as I say, like Gary O'Neill is making month by month during the season. But now what I think I'm seeing during the summer is taking them to another level. And I think that once Wolves potentially bring in somebody else to replace Neto, but also bring in another centre-back, I just don't see that they can fall off that far.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Wolves are a bit static, but I don't think the gap is big enough. I think, as you say, if Leicester hadn't, I think Leicester will 100% get a points deduction. I'm pretty convinced by it. So if they don't get that, then I think maybe Leicester will scrap it out with the other side. But I mean, I'm hoping the Ipswich do well, but it's one of those kind of things that I just can't quite find the...
Yeah, you almost want to see like a big result from game week one, don't you? You want to see one of these teams throw something in there. You know, if Leicester can beat Tottenham on that first Monday night game, if Ipswich can somehow pull out a result in the early game on the Saturday against Liverpool, and Saints against Newcastle, like 9 out of 10 people are putting Isak into their FPL team for the start of the season because they're going, oh, Southampton game week one, Isak should score 2 in that game. If it doesn't happen the way that we see all opening up.
Someone will drop. There will be at least one other team in here. I just don't know who it is yet. And right now I'm struggling to kind of find the pieces. I think that Forest have signed well. I think Wolves have signed relatively well as well. I think Brentford have signed some smart pieces to the puzzle, and their movements in the transfer market over the last couple of weeks in particular. I think at the start of this window, I was thinking, be interesting to see what happens here. And then there were rumours of someone like Norgaard leaving. Jensen was linked away. Obviously, there's the Ivan Toney thing hanging over everything. And then, obviously, Igor Thiago got injured. And it was like, oh, God, what's going to go on with Brentford here? But they just seem to have settled everything down again. And, I mean, Jens Kajust might have fallen through at this point, but that was a sensible kind of deal. Yacine Adli, sensible kind of deal. I can see what Brentford are trying to do with most of it. And I think that most of it's been pretty sharp. So I'm struggling to see them dropping into things. Let's move on. Who is going to be the top scorer in the Premier League this season?
This isn't even a discussion. We can just say Erling Haaland and move on.
All right. Who's going to be the top scorer in the Premier League outside of Erling Haaland this season?
Outside of Erling Haaland, the top goal scorer will probably be Mo Salah.
Okay. All right. I have a top three, which obviously had Haaland first. I had Darwin in at second. I think Slot unlocked.
Why?
Darwin. I've got a feeling.
Gets 10 goals this season.
The first thing that Arne Slot did when he became Liverpool manager was ring Darwin, who was off on, you know, his Uruguay tour, to reassure him he's going to be a central part of this team. I think the way that they're going to play, which is going to have a little bit more of that dynamism and kind of trying to break out the back into it, I think suits Darwin massively. And I think having Szoboszlai behind him, who is going to be trying to pull strings in a more offensive role, might really suit him. So I'm going to put Darwin in. And the other one I've got an eye on is Christopher Nkunku, who I think might be pretty sensational if he's played correctly in that 10 role.
Those two don't take pens. And that's something that I always look out for when I'm looking for top goal scorer potential. So I'd even have Cole Palmer ahead of Nkunku, because if Chelsea get 8 penalties across next season, then you add Cole Palmer scoring. Even if he only gets 8 goals from open play, suddenly on 16 goals for the season in the Premier League, and you kind of up that top end of goal scoring for the season. I mean, look, Ollie Watkins probably an oversight. Should probably throw him into
them. To start the season is the problem, and you know, obviously not getting off to a quick start does hinder you in these kind of conversations.
Yeah, and it probably comes back to the conversation we were having about the top four and who we can trust outside of Arsenal and Man City. I mean, Arsenal obviously don't have the go-to goal scorer.
They share them around.
They share them around. So you don't have that. Liverpool, I'm saying Salah more on like just basic instincts than anything else. It's like he seems to be in good spirits going into the new season. It's obviously a decent chance this will be his last season at Liverpool. He's going to be playing pretty much every minute of every game. He's going to be on set piece, he'll have penalties. And so I just find it hard to look past Salah. But then you're talking about the guys, the teams that can break through and catch up with the top three. And it's really difficult. Like Isak, if Newcastle, how many goals can Isak score next season? He's certainly not going to, I wouldn't back him to outscore Haaland. He could, him and Watkins are probably good guys that you should have backing up Haaland to really go there. And then you've got players like Son or Solanke. But the golden boot winner for next season is Erling Haaland. It's just a non-conversation.
Hand it him now. Yeah. What about assists?
I mean, I want to say Cole Palmer, but I obviously haven't really seen him working in this new Chelsea setup yet. I think that it was ridiculous last season, and he had a great impact for England during the Euros. I'm interested to see like a full version of Palmer when he's got a set of forward players that are actually all on his wavelength. And so if the Chelsea attack is leveled up to include Joao Felix, if Osimhen does go, if Pedro Neto stays clear of injuries and gets a full season at Chelsea, and Cole Palmer's also got Nkunku alongside him, possibly Nicholas Jackson as well, and he's pulling the strings behind all these guys, I think Cole Palmer like could be off the clock.
Yeah, maybe. I've got Bukayo Saka top in this list, I think.
Yeah.
I think they Arsenal are going to share them around, but I think a lot of it is still going to come down that right. And actually, they're going to find goal threat on the left. And it means that a lot of these might be slider crosses. So I'm going to put Saka into conversation.
Odegaard was the one I was going to say.
Yeah, maybe. I've got Odegaard in for something else. James Maddison, yeah. I have in here. And Anthony Gordon, who was actually very good last season, putting together an assist package. I think he might just explode a little bit again.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I don't know what we're getting from Gordon yet. I'm still half expecting, like, as soon as the Luis Diaz rumours started again today, I was like, well, if he goes, Liverpool go for Gordon. And that changes everything for...
I'd still have him in this conversation.
Well, yeah, exactly. I would have him more in this conversation. I would have him way more in this conversation. But yeah, Gordon, absolutely. Could be a very big season for him.
All right. You got any surprise packages, hot takes, good, bad, indifferent?
Honestly, I'm just hot on Wolves. I don't know why. I'm just like, any time I've like tuned in this summer to Gary O'Neill's planning and thinking and strategies, and in Wolves, there was one pre-season game where they scored this goal where they passed it from back to front, and it was one of the best goals I've ever seen in my life, right? They are being so well built under Gary O'Neill that I'm getting way too carried away with it, I think, but I like what he's doing, and I think that the depth of his thinking is probably deeper than anybody else. I don't know if you saw, but they went and got Man City's set piece coach. And I mean, that in itself is quite a coup. To go to Man City, take their set piece coach off them, bring him to Wolves. And Gary O'Neill was talking about it. He said, I've not met many people that are as deep in their analysis and their thinking and their determination to find new outcomes as this guy, and I can't wait to work with him. So I'm like, well, if Wolves are playing this brilliant fluid football and they're also going to be great at set pieces, both defending and attacking, I probably need to look out for this team. Now, obviously losing Neto slightly concerns me.
Yeah.
That's a big one. But even like Rodrigo, who's flown under the radar for everyone, I think, in terms of a sign in the summer, somebody that's going to be
Larson to is the one that I really like. Rangy, Larson, yeah, tall striker. I think that's a very smart pickup.
Yeah. I would just say, as a surprise package, look out for Wolves.
All right.
I've got two. One is that I think this is the year that Tottenham win a trophy.
No, go on, go on.
No, <That's right. laughs> I think this is it. Spurs' year. Spurs are going to win
what?
A trophy.
What are they going to win, though?
The Carabao Cup or something. Or, to be honest, the Europa League, perhaps. I think Spurs win something this season. I really do.
I don't want to make too much fun at all.
But I think Spurs win a trophy. My other one is a bit weird. I don't think Lopetegui lost the season as West Ham manager. But I think that West Ham will appoint a forward-thinking manager in like March and fire from like 16th to 11th because this squad is excellent. And I really like their transfer business. I just don't think that Lopetegui is going to be the guy to get the tune out of it. So I'm not 100% sure Lopetegui lost the season, but I think the West Ham have a pretty decent season anyway.
I'm reading between the lines there. You think the fans are going to turn on Lopetegui because he has this 100%. Abundance of attacking options, should be playing great football. They've got Paqueta, they've got Bowen, they've got Kudus.
Yeah.
They've got the, who else have they signed that's like
Somerville. Yeah, it's an incredible array of attacking options.
Yeah, they've got all these players.
I can't see Lopetegui.
It'll be Souček and Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, 100%. this is where I'm at. I don't think Lopetegui lost the season, but I still think West Ham have finished in a decent position. So yeah, that's that. Got a couple best new signing, Dean. Who's gonna take that crown?
This is a really, really difficult one, but I think in terms of fitting into a team and having an impact on that team, but also the league. Minté at Brighton for me is still one that I think is just such a good signing. I watched him play in a pre-season game the other day. They play, I want to say QPR. Watched a game. Mate, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, seriously.
Not just only his ability on the ball, but his work rate as well was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Really, really good footballer. Really good footballer. I like that. That's a great shout. I've got Ian Maatsen at Aston Villa. I think
I was wondering about Maatsen and how he might be integrated into that team and the role, because obviously Villa just love having loads of fullbacks. So I was like, is he definitely the go-to guy?
Yeah. I think potentially Alex Moreno might leave. And Jota Silva at Forest, who I think is a brilliant pickup. If he gets minutes, I think he'll be a game changer for Forest. But again, if Mikel Merino signs for Arsenal, then probably him. He's probably the guy.
Yeah, I like that. My favourite storyline of the summer actually comes from Nottingham Forest. They got the goalkeepers to train in really dark glasses when they were in Spain on their early pre-season training, and the goalies were all training like really dark glasses so that they couldn't see the ball as clearly when it was being hit, to try and improve their reflexes. I was like, I like that a lot. Yeah. That's good.
That's what you get when you have a goalkeeper as head coach. He's having to think about the keepers, right? He's like, oh, God.
That might be well true. Morgan Gibbs-White, actually, by the way, is the other one I'm looking out for this season for a big one.
Oh, okay. All right. Right, to finish off, player of the season?
Player of the season is going to be Martin Odegaard.
Yes, correct. It's also I've gone for.
Are you seriously saying that as well?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's going to be.
Wow.
I think he's going to.
We haven't had a chat about this, everyone. That is genuinely both of our takes.
Completely bold. I also think Dominic Soboslai will be in the conversation. There's one for you. But I think Odegaard.
Yeah, that is a bit more left field. Honestly, Odegaard, I just think, like, for the moment that Arsenal are in right now, and for the moment that he's in his career, it's all so perfect for him. He is such good captain material as well for this group of players and to carry out what Arteta wants. He's so cool. He's so calm. He's so confident in his own ability as well as getting the best out of this team. It feels like I've known about Odegaard my whole life and been waiting for him to have that season. And I think... And if Arsenal win the league, like this, I guess it kind of rounds it all up, really, doesn't it? Like, we started the episode by saying, like, we believe Arsenal, this can be their year. This will be their year. And if Odegaard pulls everything together and has the best season of his life, that's why it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it is that. I think he's going to be the string puller here. And like I said, I think the left-hand side is going to open up and suddenly Odegaard's got a full vision of pitch to play with. He's being able to find those gaps and those passes. I think he pulls the strings to an Arsenal title win. So, yeah, That's what we'll
end. We are.
That's what we'll end on. That's what we'll end on. So wow. All's left for me to do.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was great fun. You say thank you very much, Mr. Dean Jones. That was great.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, that was really good fun. Sorry if we upset any of you by talking bad about your team, but we're kind of guessing right now. We can't wait for the season to start the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we know that La Liga and Serie A also start this week, but we're gonna rank those and speak about those two leagues next week. We'll have at least a game week of things to look at as well. So we'll have some exploration of La Liga and Serie A next week and start to get into things in a more European sense. But we thought it was only right to talk about the Premier League this week. Thank you, as I said, to Mr. Dean Jones. I've been Jack Collins. Thank you all for listening so much. It really does mean the world to us. The FPL link for the Rank Squad is in the description. So if you fancy joining our fantasy league and trying to get the better of Dean, you'll almost certainly get the better of me. I'm a dreadful fantasy player. But if you fancy trying to get the better of Dean, then make sure you join the league and it'd be good to see you all in there. But for now, thank you so much for listening and we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.